Join us for the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society's annual conference. It's happening October 24th through the 26th in New York City. This year's theme, Rethinking Paradigms, Innovative Approaches for Optimal Wellness. And it's not just for healthcare professionals. Teachers, parents, and curious minds are invited too. We've got a phenomenal lineup of keynote speakers. Dr. Thomas Campbell, physician and co-author of The China Study, bringing insights on nutrition and lifestyle medicine. And Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, trauma expert and author of The Body Keeps the Score, who practically rewrote how we think about trauma. I'll be chatting with some of this year's speakers in upcoming episodes of Healthy Brain, Happy Body, so stay tuned to get a sneak peek and maybe even a little inspired. Find the registration link in the show notes. It's 3 days of inspiration, insight, and community you won't want to miss. Here's what Angelica Sadar, executive director of NRBS, is looking forward to.
The value is outstanding. We've priced it well. There's going to be early bird rates. If you're affiliated with the schools, there are really special rates. And if you're a member of NRBS, there's special rates. And we even have special rates for members of other professional societies such as ISNR and AAPB. The value is just going to be outstanding.
So join us in New York City, October 24th through the 26th. Find the registration link in the show notes or at nrbs.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Today, we continue our conversation with Drs. Patrick Steffen and Donald Moss. They collaborated on the book, Integrating Psychotherapy and Psychophysiology, which brings together thought leaders on mind-body health. In the last episode, we discussed the ways that psychophysiology might serve as the foundation of a unifying framework for understanding our human experience. In this episode, Dr. Steffen and Moss talk more about the clinical implications and how they might continue the work together. So you both talked about heart rate variability, which most people, I think, are probably familiar with. But for those who aren't, could you give us sort of a brief description of heart rate variability and how it might apply to this issue of psychotherapy, of affect?
Don teaches this at AAPB, so I'll let him go for this.
You're the official. You're the official okay. Instructor here. So,
well, when we say heart rate variability, what we're talking about is the moment-to-moment variations in the time period between heartbeats. And so I think the common sense approach is that if I'm relaxed, if I'm not under stress, my heart rate should be steady. But in fact, healthy heart rate is very highly variable. Fred Schaefer used the expression, the heart is not a metronome. Healthy biological organism should be constantly varying. And the medical research shows that this is true, that when people have lower variation in their heart rate, they're more vulnerable to diabetes, they're more vulnerable to heart disease, to hypertension. And what the biofeedback clinical literature shows is that we can, especially by breathing strategies, by breathing at one particular breathing rate that Paul Lehrer calls the resonance frequency, we can increase the variability, the moment-to-moment variation in our heart rate. And when we do that, we get reductions in anxiety, we get improvements in mood, post-traumatic stress is moderated, some of the post-traumatic re-experiencing is diminished, and we also see improvements in a number of medical conditions. So, When I think of preparing someone for psychotherapy, I think about teaching them slow-paced breathing, assessing what's their optimal breathing rate, which will enhance their heart rate variability, and have them practice that as they begin their therapy session. And then I also will monitor their physiology during the session, because at some point, when anxiety hits, when they have an emotional reaction to something we're talking about, it will show up in their physiology, and then I'll remind them to go back to their breathing practice, quiet their mind again, And it really deepens the psychotherapeutic process. You want to add anything to that, Patrick?
Yeah, I think clinically it's really interesting. I know like Don and Dick Everts and others use it within the session, which I think is an awesome thing. So what I've seen when I've done that is seeing changes in HRV in real time as they talk about things. And they'll say like, oh, this happened and it wasn't such a big deal, but you see this huge drop in their HRV. It's like, well, it appears to have had is bigger than you realize. And then when we kind of circle back and talk about it, it kind of comes out, oh, well, maybe it was a little bit bigger, but they're kind of avoiding it and don't want to, you know, it's even in their, you know, in a safe therapeutic setting, they're still a little bit, this is just hard. And it's, they learn over time that when you show them the screen, they say they can realize, oh, there must have, that's bugging me more than I realized, because they can see their own physiology being impacted by a thought or like thinking about an experience that was particularly painful or difficult. So I think it's great as an approach for integrating psychotherapy and psychophysiology. So bringing biofeedback within the therapy session is just an awesome way of approaching
it. Yeah. We also will typically send the patient home with instructions to continue their heart rate variability, breathing, their heart rate variability exercises at home. And that can really make a difference in enhancing their emotional self-regulation and their self-awareness.
Yeah, I think home practice is crucial. And if you look at Allaire's 2013 protocol, they need to be practicing at least 4 days a week. He says twice a day for 20 minutes each. Sometimes it can be hard to get people to commit to that. But I think home practice, it's like learning to ride a bike, right? You need to learn to get the feel of it. Because you're not directly like saying, oh, I want my heart rate to go down 5 beats. We can't do that. But we can get a feel of what does it feel like to improve HRV. So you can't necessarily think about what my physiology is doing, but you can get a feel of what does it feel like when my HRV is better? Or what does it feel like when I'm breathing at resonance? And you can just, as you learn that practice, you can gravitate that towards that with that approaching that bodily feeling.
So there's a collapse, if you will, a reduction, sudden reduction of heart rate variability when the person is talking about or thinking about some sort of stressful or negative experience, probably because of parasympathetic withdrawal.
Yes.
And so the practice, which would be paced breathing, probably at the resonance frequency, is sort of exercising that autonomic nervous system to be able to shift into that self-regulated state more easily. So it's like practicing anything else. And people eventually begin to recognize the feel, if you will, the feel of being in sort of a lower variable state, and then can just shift to the resonance frequency even for a few seconds, because after practice, it happens very quickly. You're using this in psychotherapy, and I'm curious about whether you have a story or an example, a clinical moment where you really saw it take off.
For me, we had a case where I was supervising a student that was working with a woman executive that was, she would think she was 42. She was single. She felt good about being single. But some executives came from Japan as part of the company training or something. And somehow she started comparing herself to these other women that seemed to have more. And then she started developing a social phobia. And she didn't realize that it was tied to this. And she wanted a medical explanation. And she kept going to doctors. And they kept saying, you know, this sounds like anxiety. And she did not want to hear that. And she tried psychotherapy a few times and stopped. And she tried one more time. And we started with biofeedback. So we're going to start with biofeedback to work, because it sounds like your stress response is very strong. And she said, oh yeah, I totally agree with that. And it was having the biofeedback going while talking about these things that she started realizing that she was becoming socially disengaged because of these stressors. And she was like, oh, this is real, because she was told that it's all in, she felt like she was being told it was all in her head. And we were trying to explain to her, it's like, well, it's in your, anything that's in your head is in your body too, that there's no magical line separating your head from your body. And so if you're feeling things, it has a complete impact on you. It's not something only in your head, so to speak. And that was like her aha moment that, that my stress and my anxiety sort of surrounding the work environment, it's all tied together. It's not just like I'm going crazy. That's what people are afraid of, right? I'm just going crazy. But the doctors are just telling me that there's not, you know, it's just anxiety. There's nothing that you could do about it. So that moment was just like, to me, it was like gold when she was able to make that connection using the biofeedback and being aware of her body and recognizing, oh, this is driving my social anxiety, was my physiological responses. And I can do something about that. I can learn to calm my physiology and be with my social fears. And then she was able to overcome her social anxieties and kind of get back to being the, I don't know what the technical term is. I'll call her a high-powered executive, but she was very successful and she got back into that and feeling confident in her abilities to do that. So that was a wonderful experience for us.
Don, I was going to ask you about a case you present in the book, the 75-year-old with the vivid dreams.
Yes.
And how that disturbed his sleep. I wonder if you could talk about that case and sort of how it reflects your model of integrated care.
Well, he was a very interesting man. The initial call I got said he wanted help with a sleep disorder. Well, when he arrived in the office, the wife insisted on coming in with him and said, she kept saying, "I'm tired of his women." Well, it turned out that the women were dreams that he was having every night. He was having dreams of sexual experiences, various sexual partners. And the sleep disorder had to do with these repetitive sexual experiences that were disturbing the marriage. He kept insisting. They had a good marriage. His wife, he said, was a good Christian woman. She was a good woman. He loved her, and the dreams had nothing to do with her. Well, over time, I used a variety of relaxation training strategies with him, muscle relaxation, paced breathing, and I also monitored his physiology. And he was one to minimize, as Patrick mentioned, minimize his emotion. No, that didn't bother me. Well, it looks like your physiology is quite upset by that. Your body's upset, even though you're not. And eventually he began to acknowledge, well, maybe that bothers me more than I thought, or more than I wanted to admit. And he began to pay attention himself to changes in the physiology on the computer screen as we talked about his relationship history, and that's where the troubles lay. The troubles lay in an early experience where he actually had an sexual experience with a tutor in high school, and then a failed marriage during his military service. And I don't know which was more powerful in him overcoming the difficulties. He did his relaxation exercises at bedtime every night. And I had suggested to him that if you do this, you're probably going to remember more detail in the morning of your dreams. Well, that was a therapeutic suggestion, and it worked. He began to recall more details. He also found the dreams gradually diminishing. I had him, as we identified some of the women in his past that he was still experiencing some issues about, I had him write letters to them, and we used physiological monitoring to monitor as he would read the letters aloud to me. We watched his physiological response on the computer screen. And then again, I would have him do some paced breathing, and he began to diminish that response to the letters. Over time, this systematic desensitization, recognized process in psychotherapy, was very effective for him. And eventually, he reached acceptance for all of the past relationships, and they became more mundane for him, more trivial, less disturbing, less preoccupying, and began to be open to new experiences with his current wife. I think the relaxation training, the heart rate variability training, and then the use of the monitoring during the session were all equally important. He thought the he called the breath training, he called that magic meditation, because it seemed like for him, this really made a difference in his health and his emotional health in particular. So I don't care which was really the most powerful, but the coming together of low arousal training, basically heart rate variability training, where we're activating the parasympathetic nervous system, and then good psychotherapy. He cooperated much better because he could see the computer screen and he could acknowledge things that were troubling him, things that otherwise he would have minimized.
So physiology, psychophysiology, it gives us another point of entry. And I think it's incredibly useful for the clients to see what's going on, as that example really illustrates. And then it also, I think, gives us a new way of seeing things. So this is a bit of the preaching to the choir. But one of the questions that often comes up when I'm talking with my colleagues is, why don't more people do this? And I wonder if you could talk to that. I was thinking about that with the chapter by Paul Lehrer, and I've heard him talk about this as well. He really critiques our underuse of things like progressive muscle relaxation, autogenic training, and as well as biofeedback and psychotherapy. I'm curious about what your take on this underutilization is, and what we might do about it as a field and as professionals.
That's an excellent question. I think that's a direction Don and I would like to take as well. And I think one reason people don't do it is they're intimidated. It's like, oh, I have to learn the psychophysiological, not just the approach, but the equipment, you know, the uptake and learning. You know, it feels like, you know, when we get PhDs or master's degrees, it's like we're learning more and more, but about more and more narrow areas. And then we're like a little bit nervous about stepping out of that zone of knowledge. And so I think, what do we do about that? I think, like, Don has written, I think, with Fred Schaefer, bit more, how do we kind of distill this so that people could learn it? So finding what are the core things to learn, and how do we teach this to, say, to a psychotherapist that's trained, they want to learn this, but, you know, there's the time commitment, right? That you're going to learn this very new, unfamiliar approach. So distilling the key elements and putting together a program would be awesome. I think that would be a great next step, so to speak, from this first book.
And one thing I would add to that, Patrick, is the cost. I mean, at one point I had $40,000 at least in instrumentation in my office assisting me in psychotherapy. Well, the average therapist isn't ready to spend $500, let alone $40,000. But today, with so many portable devices emerging on the market, many of them under $200, I think we have an opportunity where therapists they may not be getting the full training, but they're starting to use portable devices to enhance their patients' learning. And I think that's encouraging. Of course, now we need to integrate some training that really utilizes, you know, the HeartMath devices, the optimal HRV devices, the elite HRV devices, teaching therapists how to use these, how to integrate them into the session, but also into the patient's homework.
So something like the M-Wave or the optimal,
yes,
HRV, or Elite, those would be a good first step for clinicians. I think, you know, the equipment is readily available. It's not super expensive. Are there other sort of first steps you might suggest for a clinician who is interested in dipping their toes in?
For me, my first step was going to AAPB and taking the HRV class. So learning the basics. So there's seminars or workshops that are available out there. And I know there's different companies that do them as well. So taking advantage, there are training opportunities out there. And AAPB being an excellent example.
I also think learning a variety of relaxation strategies is helpful. Paul Lehrer is regarded as the pioneer for heart rate variability biofeedback in the United States, because way back in the 80s, he visited St. Petersburg, Russia, and learned about the work that the Russians were doing and brought it home to the U.S., did some good research and found that it was very effective. And yet in his chapter, he advocated a variety of simple strategies. You don't need fancy, expensive equipment to do progressive muscle relaxation or to do autogenic training. And those things can be, any psychotherapist can learn how to use those relaxation strategies along with paced diaphragmatic breathing and greatly enhance what happens in psychotherapy. I rarely, in the last 10 years of my practice, I rarely started a session without doing 5 minutes of relaxation with the patient, and then we begin. And I had patients who would say, you're wasting my time doing that breathing before we get into the meat of things. And I would say, no, not wasting your time. I've just learned that I get farther with my patients faster if we begin with self-quieting.
It's really interesting too, building on that, the Paul Gilbert's chapter, he talks about what he calls a soft landing, which is starting with 5 minutes of, and he calls it soothing rhythm breathing instead of resonance breathing. So doing some soothing rhythm breathing and do some compassionate thought, you know, compassionate mental focus. So yeah, that's an excellent idea of, you know, there's simple things that you can do that don't cost, either cost nothing or cost, you know, a minimal amount.
Yeah, it might be a nice idea for either AAPB or a similar organization to kind of put together small sort of lower level trainings than full certification, yeah. Particularly focused on different aspects of physiology and how different relaxation or self-regulation exercises kind of go after particular physiologic systems. Because I think that can also help the clinician decide what to use, whether it's, you know, progressive muscle relaxation versus paced breathing. There's a lot of overlap, but they also have different sort of impacts. So you two, you know, during this conversation, I've sort of gotten the sense you're very simpatico. You sort of have a lot of similar ideas, and you're thinking about work that you'll do together going on from here. And I imagine writing a book together was quite the journey. And are there any moments that you can think of where you kind of learned from each other or challenged each other or were surprised by the other person?
I've never put a book together like that before where Don has more experience with that. So I was learning from him every time about best processes or best strategies, best practices. There's the word. Best practices for going. So I learned a lot about how do you even put a book together like this. So hats off to Don for.
Well, and I have to say, I was just delighted. For example, I didn't know Paul Gilbert's work. And Patrick persuaded Paul to contribute 2 chapters. Well, I had to do the work of editing them. Oh, every other paragraph, I was learning something. So I was so excited. I think we complement each other in the networking that we've done in our careers and who we're in touch with. These are rich authors. Chase Sherwell, James Kirby, Nicola Petrocci, Christina Ottaviani. These chapters, they were compassion focused, but they also really touched on what happens with HRV, what happens with the parasympathetic system, how does this impact on the person's functioning. So I was really grateful that Patrick brought some of these authors in.
Just thinking of Christina Ottaviani, if you're anybody's interested in learning kind of like an in-depth psychophysiological approach to psychotherapy. She's trained both with Paul Gilbert and Julian Thayer. So that's why I got to know her is through Julian Thayer. And she does a good job of kind of doing the type of integration we're interested in doing that. She's not a therapist. She's a psychophysiologist, but she thinks in terms of like compassion as a key area. And she does a really good job. So as Don was mentioning, there's lots of different people from different perspectives, and all of them are just, to me, are very thought-provoking to read things. Authors that brought up stuff. I was like, I never thought of it that way before, was aware of that line of research or that line of, you know, approach to therapy. So just being a part of the book was very enriching for me.
Is there one big takeaway you'd like our listeners to end up with?
As my biggest takeaway would be, there's tons of research in this area. And the next step is, how do we get this into the applied clinical realm. So the research is there, I think, and the next step is let's apply this.
And I would agree. I would agree. I think I would like to see every psychotherapist learning at least a few self-care strategies. And there are many roads to activating the parasympathetic nervous system, but I think we have to pay attention. The very fact that what we're doing as psychotherapists could be richer, could be more effective if we pay attention to changes in the body.
Well, the book is Integrating Psychotherapy and Psychophysiology. I think it's a really, just it's a great volume, not just for people like me who know a lot about this, but for people who are just interested and know very little. Because as you've both said, there's just such a broad range of voices. And there's, if you're interested in doing psychotherapy and doing better psychotherapy, there will be something in this book for you. So obviously, I'm going to agree with you that we need to integrate physiology into this work. So I want to thank you both so much for joining me here on Healthy Brain, Happy Body, and look forward to going back to the book again after talking with you.
Thank you very much for having us. It's been great.
I appreciate this opportunity, Saul. Take care.
You are listening to Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guides today were Drs. Patrick Steffen and Donald Moss. Follow the links in the show notes to learn more about their work and their most recent book, Integrating Psychotherapy and Psychophysiology. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the Subscribe Here link or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Reviews help us to get more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Also, let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. This year, NRBS will gather in New York City from October 24th to the 26th. Be sure to join us. All opinions expressed on Healthy Brain, Happy Body are those of our guests, and not the NRBS. This podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.